listening to The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema with Big Willie and the Samurai, bringing class to trash since 1977.
Everybody, welcome to the GGTMC. We are back on the air. It is early in the morning. Anyway, yes, we are back. We got a listener sponsored episode, I guess you could say, from the Kickstarter campaign. We inadvertently gave credit to the wrong Bernie. I don't know how many times in my life I'm going to be able to say the wrong Bernie.
That's right. The wrong man. We fingered the wrong man.
Yeah, we fingered the wrong Bernie. for this one, we gave it to Bernie Sticky, who's a good friend of the show. But this is actually Bernie De Lopez.
Yeah, stateside, the man who's done some tremendous, tremendous artwork for us, and just as recently popped back up on the Facebook group. So yes. Hopefully he'll stick around for a bit.
Yeah. So. We're doing his picks, and his picks were Dr. Jekyll and His Women from 1981, or also known as the Bloodbath of Dr. Jekyll, also known as Dr. Jekyll and The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Miss Osborne, directed by Valerian Borochek. I believe that's how you say his name anyway, Borochek.
Sounds good to me.
I know that last part is Czech. I can tell you that because I got a friend with that last four digits.
I hate to say it, but you're wrong. It's actually Polish.
Yeah. Well, it is Polish. But anyway, but I just said Czech.
Oh, you mean the pronunciation, not the region.
Yes.
Not the country that dominated us in hockey for a few years. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Had a good drink there. And The Hidden, which I believe is 1987.
Also directed by Valerian Borochek.
Wow. I can tell you what The Hidden would be about, you know. It wouldn't be hidden for very long.
No, it wouldn't. And it would be a scimitar.
Yes, it would. God, loved pointy phalluses.
Jeez.
Anyway.
Fucking boomerang, man.
That one's directed by Jack Shoulder, who I've always thought was a funny name.
It's a good porn name.
It is a good name. Porn name. My name is Jack Shoulder. All right, so that's what we're doing as far as Bernie's picks. I believe also, and I want to say this now, and I could be wrong, but if I am wrong, we're going to fulfill somebody else's request.
I think the other Bernie again, ironically, if I know where you're going with this.
But I believe Bernie wanted us to talk about how we met and how the show got generated and stuff. So we've done that in the past, but I can't remember what episode. I can't remember when. I can't remember the blah, blah, blah. So, but we'll go through, a brief synopsis, essentially, after we talk about what we've been watching, about the genesis of the show. Again, and, you know, every now and then it's good to kind of go through this because some people don't want to go back and listen to all the back episodes. I mean, there's, unlike a lot of podcasts, everything we've ever done is available. So I can understand if somebody doesn't want to go back looking for it. So we'll kind of skim over that a little bit. Kind of give Bernie, or hopefully Bernie. I reached out to him to double check. He never got back with me. But hey, if not, then like I say, we're fulfilling somebody's wishes. But anyway, until we do that, what you've been watching is really simple. I'm going to get it out of the way right now. I usually defer to you first, but I have watched no other films other than the films for the show. I've watched a lot of Doctor Who. I've watched a lot of Olympic highlights. I've watched my son in a little cardboard house. Well, not a little cardboard house, a rather gigantic cardboard house we bought. I've watched him draw a lot of pictures.
You bought him a cardboard house?
Yeah, well, they get these like cardboard houses you can buy for like $20.
Yeah.
And you can color them. And they come in, they're like cardboard, but they're like black and white.
How big is it? Like he can fit inside it, I guess?
Me, my wife, and him can fit inside of it.
Wow, for $20. I'm going to have to grab one for my boys when I'm in Indianapolis.
Yeah, well, be warned, they take up a lot of space. So I had to, it's rather big. So I had to, you know, I kind of got to fold it up and put it away every now and then. But anyway, we've been kind of doing that. And he's fascinated by the mail slot, which I find hilarious. You know, he's always telling me, mail? And he'll run and grab a piece of paper and stick the mail in there. He's like fascinated by being the mailman right now. It's like I've been teasing him and stuff. But to be the mailman stuff.
If you were talking about Matt Suzaka, I would say you're probably referring to a different mail slot.
Yes, yes, you would be correct. You would be correct about that, too. Yes.
Man, I can't believe these cardboard houses exist. I've never even heard of them. I remember getting like appliance boxes as a kid and being over the moon that we could play inside them.
Yeah, yeah, I did the same thing. And you know, I work in an industry where boxes are common, and I could have built this thing. But evidently, they make these things, and my wife picked it up for like $20, I guess, just to kind of have some fun. She thought it was a lot smaller. She didn't look at the measurements on the box. And then when she got it, and it comes, of course, it comes in a box that doesn't look gigantic because of the way it's folded, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when she gets it out and puts it together, she sends me a picture over the phone, and I was like, holy shit, that's a big box. I would have never built one that big. But anyway, that's all I've really been doing. I haven't been doing much else. So, what have you been watching, Will?
I've been watching my Rice Krispies spoon go in my mouth. I had a good week, man. Very good week. I did started the week off with A Dirty Shame, the John Waters film.
Ah, yes.
Which I'd never seen. Big John Waters fan. I was feeling charitable, so I let my wife have a decent amount of say in what we watched on a night that was supposed to be my night. What I mean by that is we split the week up. She decided that Sunday, Mondays, and Thursdays are her nights because that coincides with the show she watches. So I got Monday, Tuesday, Friday, and Saturday's a mutual day. Sundays are going to come back to me, though, in September for obvious reasons. But we watched Dirty Shame. It's pretty good. It's pretty stupid and obvious in spots. It's almost like a young person or a young kind of first time filmmaker trying to, you know, overtly talk about shocking sexual taboos or fetishes. But it's clearly not. It's John Waters who's probably got an encyclopedic knowledge of kink. It's good, man. Tracy Ullman's good. Selma Blair, I've always had a thing for her, despite her being kind of hard-looking.
Yeah, me too. I love watching her pick up a bottle with her ass in this one or whatever.
Oh, that was Tracy Ullman.
Oh, yeah, no, it wasn't.
That was incredible. Never thought I'd see Tracy Ullman picking up a bottle, squatting on a bottle with it, and picking it up with her pussy in an old folks' home.
Yeah, the film is not John Waters' like great film, but
no.
Sadly, it might be the last John Waters film because it doesn't sound like he's got anything going on. Like, you know, I don't know if he's ever going
to. Yeah, I think he's content to kind of do books and lectures and stuff, which is cool.
I liked it. It's not like, you know, his masterpiece, but I did like it, and I did like the fact that here's this man who's up in age and stuff, and it's completely tasteless, right?
Oh, is it ever? I think it was NC-17. There's some pretty funny stuff in it, though. Like, my wife somehow didn't know what a bear was before watching this.
She knows now.
She knows now. But yeah, no, it was fun. I had a smile on my face, you know, like I said,
it was fun. It was fun. I mean, I don't like fun.
Yeah. I watched some more Louis Theroux. I watched one of his Wild Weekends ones about UFOs. A lot of people seem to really dig this one. I thought it was okay. The only part I really liked was he goes to this place called the Blue Fountain or the Blue Crystal. Not church, but anyways, something called the Blue Crystal something or other, Blue Fountain something.
Is that like the gay bar in Police Academy?
Or Blue Oyster, thereby. Yeah, the Blue Waffle. But thankfully it's not. This guy who considers himself like the high priest of the place, he looks like, man, he's got like Jack... anyway, he's got just a wild mane.
Jack Nance.
He's got hair comparable to that almost. And anyway, so this guy claims that he can channel aliens from another you know, from another galaxy.
Yeah.
And so he starts, he's like an alien medium. So he starts channeling them and talking in this weird voice as if he's an alien. Mm-hmm. And that was a
doesn't sound watermark. Yeah, it doesn't sound suspicious at all.
No, not at all. And it's a high watermark. Like, how anyone could do this with a straight face and take people's money for it. And people would actually, listen, if you buy into that, you deserve to have your money taken. So I have no sympathy for you. So it was okay. That was the only part I really, really dug. We rewatched The Lorax. My mother-in-law bought it for us quite cheap. It's a good one. It's very colorful. Have you guys seen that?
I have not seen it yet, but I am looking forward to watching it because we need some fresh animated films in this house. Bye.
Yeah, man. And it's a good one. It's not, you know, it's not an earth shaker, but it's fun. It's very colorful. The blue, beautiful.
I can imagine.
Oh, man. And I'm a big fan of Zeus. I mean, we grew up with him.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Lorax character in general. Yeah, the original cool. from back in the day.
Yeah, man. It's a good one. I completely shifted gears that night and went into a film nothing like The Lorax called Buhachi Bushido, Code of the Forgotten Eight.
Nice.
And this is a film I'd meant to see for about 5 or 6 years. I've had the DVD on my Amazon wish list since, for about, 5 or 6 years. And finally, Chris Davies Rowan, our good friend on the west coast of Canada, was like, man, you got to see this now. So I was like, all right, let's do it. So I watched it, and it's so fucking good. I cannot recommend it enough.
Nice. Is that where Chris is? I didn't know he was in Canada. I thought he was American. Yeah.
No, sir. He's a BC boy.
Nice. Yeah. Know how them BC boys are.
Oh, yeah. He posted a few pictures about his Total Recall viewings. But that's how BC boys are, man. Well, that's how a lot of Canadians are. I abstain these days, but, teach their own, certainly. Mm-hmm. But no, man, it was a fucking incredible film. It's Turo Ishii, who's a really good filmmaker. You know, I've seen a handful of his films, maybe 3 to 4, I want to say. And I'm a big fan of his. It's so good. It's probably like the most sleazy samurai film you ever. It makes Hanzo look pretty like a period piece, kind of tight-lipped. It's so sleazy.
Nice.
It's really good. And the last fight scene, like the last battle, is so fucking badass. Like, I got chills. I'm getting chills just thinking about it.
Awesome.
It's very cool. We're going to do it on the show, man, because it's so rad. So sometime down the road, we'll do it. I think it might be on Netflix too. Then I watched a National Geographic documentary called Underworld Tijuana, which is about the drug trade in Tijuana.
That sounds interesting.
Sadly, not about a donkey show.
Oh.
But just about the drug trade, and
I just lost interest.
Yeah. Well, I almost turned it off too when I saw it wasn't with donkey shows. But no, it was good. I didn't know a lot of the details of it, but I kind of had a big picture idea of how bad things were in Mexico, to the point where I'm never going to go back there as a vacationer. I've been there and I loved it, but I'm not going to go back, man. There's just too much shit going on there. And too many Canadians, oddly, are getting killed there, it seems. So,
yeah, well, anybody that goes there runs the risk, right? I mean, I think they even tell you now, if you go to one of the resorts, you know, same thing as like Jamaica, sadly. They tell you, don't leave the resort, please. Which is always, comforting whenever you go somewhere and they say, hey, you know, we need you to stay within this square radius because we cannot promise you your safety if you do
Jamaica not. Is insane. There's so much gunplay in Jamaica. And it's a shame because Negril and Ocho Rios, Montego Bay, all these places are beautiful. But it's too much bullshit now, man. It's a bummer, but, that's the way it goes. But meanwhile, like I said, I was downtown Havana with my family, strutting around, and I felt perfectly safe.
Yeah, so. But propaganda would tell you that downtown Havana is not safe. Right? Yeah. American propaganda, not Canadian propaganda.
Exactly. Yeah. No, exactly. But it is. It's absolutely safe.
It's crazy because a Canadian, like you told me that a long time ago, and I mentioned that it's like commonplace for Canadian people to go on vacation.
Oh, yeah. It's a huge spot for Canadians to go for vacations. They love us there, man.
Yeah.
You know. Then I watched Roman porno, Pinky film. I'm still, and I'm sure someone, Jay or someone, can clarify, I'm still a little uncertain on. I could look it up. I don't know why I never have. the difference between a pinku film and a Roman porno. And I think you and I have even discussed this on the air before, but it's one of those films. It's called Black Hair, Velvet Soul.
I tell you what, the Roman porno films have some of the best titles.
Oh God, yeah.
Currently. And some of these, yeah. Some of these, what's the other one? The Nippon, not Nippon, what's the other genre? I'm not really familiar with it, but it's like a sex genre, like a pinky genre. I don't know that. I can't think of the title off the top of my head, but they got like
those. Oh, I know if you're talking about Nikatsu, the label. They put out a lot of Roman porno, I believe.
Just great titles like, you know, Sex Hell and Apartment, blah, 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 and, you know, whatever. Anyway, just great titles out there.
Yeah, yeah. Zero Woman, Red Handcuffs. Like, there's just a lot of wild titles in that whole pink / Roman porno genre. I'm going to look up what Roman porno is right now. It's a in this day and age for me to have any fucking foggy notions about things like that.
I'll honestly say...
Oh, it's just a pink film. It's another name for pink film.
Yeah, just I'll honestly say just most... Nikatsu is the
Nikatsu.
Word.
Nikatsu. Who's a good... certainly a good studio.
Yeah, Castle Orgies is a title... Co-ed report, Blooming Yuko.
Here's one. I don't want to know what's blooming.
Here's one of my favorite ones. Sex Rider, Wet Howie. So, you know, I mean,
nice.
Titles like that, you know, automatically catch my attention because they remind me in some ways of like these giallo titles and the way that they kind of put words together. Because, you know, giallo titles always had the best titles, right? I mean, they had some of the great titles, the giallo films.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they definitely did.
Here's one called Eros Schedule Book Concubine Secrets Tattoo Contest.
Tattoo Contest. That's awesome.
So, you know, I mean, you see what you're getting into. I mean, this genre leaves, you know what you're walking into. Let's put it that way.
Oh, okay. So it seems like the difference between, as best I can tell from a very quick search, Roman films were just Nikatsu's pink films with a bit of a higher budget than the standard pinku film. So there you have it. But anyway. So,
Sex Rider has a sequel, too, by the way, called Injured List.
Yeah, well, if you're riding and you're not careful, you will be on the injured list.
Oh, man.
That's a painful fucking injury, let me tell you.
Especially on the wet highway.
Yes. Well, you better make sure the highway's wet or it's going to be even more painful.
Man, this genre's deep, man. I'm just kind of scrolling
through.
No
pun intended.
Yeah. On both counts.
Yeah.
This. Oh, man, there's a lot of films.
There's a ton. There's a ton. And, oh, God, yeah. I like pink films. Like, see, I don't like the flat-out kind of softcore pink films. I could care less. I've said before, when I want to watch porn, I want to watch porn. I want to see penetration. I want to see...
Yeah.
I want to see everything, and I'm not a fan of softcore. I never have been. It's
the difference. Bothersome. It's definitely the difference between a wet highway and a dry highway.
Indeed, and because when it is, it's either I want to either watch a film with nudity that's a proper film, or I want to watch a porn. I don't want that line straddled because it's you end up when you try to please both, you please none. For me,
yeah, understood. Anyway. Understood.
But Black Hair Velvet Soul is about a guy who's a gambler. He loses his sends over the deed to his. A restaurant that's been in his wife's family for years. He loses, and in the process, he loses his wife and the restaurant. She becomes a sex slave to the Yakuza. So it's not very good. Has a few moments, but whatever. C'est la vie. Then I decided to shift gears again, get into Bud Hill. Bud Spencer. I always say Bud Hill.
I almost thought you said Bud Hill, and I was like, what porno is this?
Another Nikatsu classic.
Yeah. It goes right up there with another great title here, Wet and Waiting.
Nice. I bet.
This one leaves a little to the imagination right here. Mischievous Lolita attacking the virgin from behind. So
wow.
That one.
Aggressive dame.
Yeah.
By the sounds of it.
Sounds like a biography of Dr. Zom. Anyway.
Double Trouble, which was another...
I love when you watch these films because I always get like this. It's funny. Like, you're watching them, and I'm like happy for you watching them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're so good, man. Bud Spencer, Terrence Hill. You know, it's that era. This one was the one I'd been meaning to see for a long time, where they go to Brazil and they double for these rich cousins who happen to be mirror images of them.
Yeah, and then they wear white suits.
They wear white suits. It's fun. My favorite is still Go For It, where they become super spies in Miami. But it's a fun one. They're fun films, man. There's lots of fist fights, and it's clean. You know, it's, I guess another year or two, my kids are going to watch them. So then I watched Goon, which is a film that I didn't have a lot of interest in, despite being Canadian and loving hockey. But I heard some good things from, I think, Zom and Coop and a few other people that were quite into it. So, again, I decided I'd watch something mutual with the wife.
Netflix Instant, eh?
Netflix Instant, that's right. It's good, but it's definitely not without fault. I had some problems with it. I feel like it kind of doesn't know if it wants to be like a Farrelly Brothers kind of raunchy comedy or something a little more poignant. It's shot really well and it looks good, and you get a few really good performances, including one from Liev Schreiber and one from Sean William Scott, actually. He's not given any favors with some of the dialogue, but he's quite good in it.
I'm tempted to watch it, just haven't really got around to it.
Make sure you're in a good mood, because some of the stuff early on will bother you otherwise. Like, there's some pretty obvious stuff, like just like in baseball where the pitcher's crazy, and in hockey the goalie's kind of known to be crazy.
Yeah.
Or like the drummer in music. But
I guess the question is there good hockey hair in it?
Sadly, there's not.
Oh, man. No Jaeger? No Jaromir?
No, sadly. Sadly, no Jaeger hair.
The master of the mullets.
Fucking right. but no, it's still good. It's got heart.
I'll check it out at some point, just not in a rush.
Yeah, when you're in a good mood, it's fine to watch. Two last ones I watched, Unit 7, which is a Spanish film I'd meant to watch about a group of narcotics police in Seville, Spain, in the late 80s leading up to the Expo 92 in Seville. They were charged to clean up the streets from drugs. Good film, but a lot of the stuff feels very familiar. So, you know, it was one I had high hopes for this year, but it's good. It just feels very redundant. Like, I've seen this all before in Elite Squad and in All Cops Are Bastards and a few other films. So it just felt like familiar territory. So it kind of lessened the impact of some of the stuff happening, but still worth a watch. And finally, I closed out the week with a Hong Kong film. I decided yesterday morning I was going to rededicate myself to Hong Kong film. I've been trying to come up with a list of my favorite Hong Kong films for A Hero Never Dies, our good friend, who's got a great blog that I mention at the end of our show every week. And I thought, man, you know, there's a lot of Hong Kong films I haven't seen that I mean to see. And in me getting some of these back out there into the front of my head to see that, like I said, I've never seen, it'll also encourage me to drop some on you that we can kind of get into together. So, the first one that I watched was a Yuen Biao joint that a lot of people really had high words for, and it's On the Run, another Chris Davies Rowan recommendation too. It's really fucking good.
Nice.
It's like a really, like a proper dark, dark neo-noir. Yuen doesn't even fight. Like, there's only one insane stunt with him in the whole film. Like, if you'd never seen him before, you'd have no inclination that he's like an incredible martial artist. It's really good, man. And it's fucking downbeat, nasty, really well shot. Like, I posted some screenshots yesterday from it with a lot of neon and stuff like that. It's quite good. A high recommend for me. So that's it, man.
Nice, nice. What a good run. Yeah, good week. I'm glad you had a good week. Like I say, it's been too busy. I should say that... I worked about 70 hours last week as well. As a matter of fact, I've worked every day except today, last week.
And then you're up at fucking 4:30 today.
Yes, it's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this, my buddy, is heaven compared to what some of the crap I had to deal with this week. So anyway.
Amen.
Okay, so I think we'll get into just a little bit about how this show got started. So I'm going to go ahead and just kind of start going while you're eating your Crispies.
Nice.
And kind of get going and kind of give Bernie an idea how we get going. Now, essentially, I'll start from my side. I saw this word podcast when I bought an MP3 player for my wife. And it's funny. I thought I'd never really own an MP3 player. I bought her an iPod. I thought, you know, I don't really need one of those. I got, you know, thousands of songs on CDs and
got my ghetto blaster.
Yeah, I got my ghetto blaster like the dude in The Hidden. So I take, yeah. Take it to the diner.
Have the hot face, open face sandwich for lunch.
But so anyway, I got it for her. And what happened first was I stumbled across Comic Book, which I'm a huge comic. For those of you who don't know, I'm a huge comic book fan, and used to be more so when I bought them all the time. But I don't really buy them much anymore. So I started listening to these podcasts about comic books, and I thought, well, you know what? I really like movies. See if I can find some of those. So I went through the whole motions of listening to like very standard movie podcasts, you know, new film podcast and all that stuff. I'd go through all those. And then I stumbled upon one by accident completely, called Cinema Diabolica. Now, Cinema Diabolica covered films that I really loved. Films that I didn't think very many other people loved. I mean, I knew there was fans of films that I liked out there. You know, the stuff that we cover now essentially is pretty similar to what Cinema Diabolica covered. Maybe except the fact that we added action films and a little
art house
and a little bit more Asian film than they did. But essentially exploitation films. And I kind of stumbled across it and became a dedicated listener to it. Looked forward to that show every week. Was so happy to hear. I still have all of their episodes on my hard drive. It's still my favorite podcast of all time. Not my favorite right now, I should say, but my favorite of all time. And I still love those guys, and I'm still in contact with those guys, as I know you are as well. Mm-hmm. I consider them friend or whatever. So anyway, in the process of this, I started to realize there was these voicemails from another dude who loved films the same way I did, and his name was Big Willie. And so, you know, it became this thing where we would kind of go back and forth with voicemails to the show. I mean, we wouldn't call in every week, but just about every other week you would hear from one of us. Mm-hmm. And it became a thing. And I just thought Will's interests were interesting. And I think he felt the same way. Somehow we became friends on Facebook. But it was just one of those friend things where,
well,
you know.
Facebook came after.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, we kind of got to talk and chat and talking, on Pop Syndicate, right?
Yeah, so, that's right.
But then we kind of, you know, hooked up on Facebook and stuff. And, you know, it became one of those kind of friendships where it's like, you know, I kind of know this dude, but I don't really know this dude. But it's one of those kind of Facebook friendships, you know. So we got to talking on there. And my favorite part about the story is always this part. I remember I was thinking about doing a podcast, but I didn't really know where to go with it. And I think you were in the same boat. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know you were thinking this, and you didn't know I was thinking this. And I remember we were talking. Our mutual respect for Charles Bronson kind of got this going.
It did.
Which is why he's, you know, one of the titans of the show. The Henry Silva thing kind of came about by accident.
It did.
It came about with Alligator, and it kind of just became this thing. And then it kind of got solidified with Cry of a Prostitute.
Oh, yeah.
But the Charles Bronson thing was the original thing, and it was I remember you talking about Rider on the Rain, and then me talking
and
about
Hard Times.
Yeah, and Hard Times, and me talking about like 10 to Midnight and all these films, the more puffy, the puffy Charles Bronson era. Call it the puffy era. When he kept his shirt on. But so that kind of started and stuff. And I remember we were instant chatting on Facebook and just kind of talking back and forth. And there was this long hesitation when I was doing something else. I was in school at the time. And then I remember you hit me back saying, you know, I know you think you sent me to me an email, maybe I should say, or a Facebook message. I can't remember.
Maybe. It was email, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, hey, man, why don't we do a podcast? And
in fact, no, it was a Pop Syndicate PM.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. It was. Back in the day with the PMs, the Pop Syndicate PMs. And why don't we do a podcast? And that kind of started it. And that whole thing was the basic genesis of it. But then we did what I think was the smartest move on both of our parts, which I think we would both agree on. We kind of had it going. I think we took about 3 months before we put one out. But we took about 3 months discussing it. Talking to each other all the time, getting to know each other really well, like we'd never not known each other, right?
That's right.
And that was all not only planned, but also, you know, for our own benefit, just getting to know each other anyway, be, you know, become better friends. But it was all kind of planned, too, not to sound like, you know, like it's a robotic thing. But, you know, we wanted to get to know each other more. And so we just kind of developed this camaraderie over the phone, essentially.
Yeah.
And that ended
up, because I'm in Toronto, Canada, and you're in Louisville, Kentucky, for those that don't know.
So, you know, there's just quite a bit, 700, 800 miles between us. And so that's where that all kind of came from. And so that by the time we ended up recording the first episode, we sounded like we'd known each other forever. And that was, if there's anything about our show that I'm always very proud of, is that we took that time.
Oh, yeah.
Because we could have just said, hey, let's just do it. Hit record. And, you know, got to know each other on the air, which would have been interesting as well. But, you know, if you guys could have heard some of the phone conversations over those 3 months.
Oh, man.
Pretty good stuff.
Yeah, I always wish we had a recorder. We could have recorded some of these conversations. You know, it would have been fascinating.
Yeah, they were fun.
Yeah. No, I know. I'll just kind of briefly, you've kind of talked about the big picture. But yeah, briefly, that's exactly what it was. For me, I stumbled into podcasts quite by accident. I was at a Rumorg horror convention, and the Mondo Cane box set was on for like a ridiculously cheap price, like $15 or something. Just, they have like door crasher sales, and I didn't buy the set. And then I thought about it, I kind of regretted it. It's because it was a nice set. There was a lot of special features and stuff, and interviews with Kavera, and I can't remember the other guy's name. I'm not going to waste time thinking about it. So I didn't buy the set. And I've kind of thought, man, this fucking sucks. I should have bought that set. So one day I Googled Mondo film set or something like that. Mondo movies set or something. And this thing called the Mondo Movie Podcast.
Yeah, yeah. I should say I didn't give them credit, but they were one of the first ones I listened to as well.
Yeah, they were the first one I listened to. Mm-hmm. Ben and Dan over in England. And I was just in love because I worked 14-hour shifts a lot of times by myself.
Yeah,
I didn't really have this thing that would enable me to listen to people discussing the films I loved. So I loved them, and I listened to every episode up until, you know, the past. Their output's been dodgy because their lives have gotten pretty busy. So I've stopped listening. You know, I've every now and then I'll listen to a new episode, but I can't keep up. It became too infrequent for me to keep checking. I'm too busy anyway. So, but I loved every other one of their old episodes. They turned me on to some great films. They had a great chemistry. And then I thought, man, this show is great. I got to try to find another one. So the second film podcast I ever discovered was Cinema Diabolica. And what put it over for me was the fact that I think episode 8 or 9 or something like that for them, I called in, because it was something DZ had said about Tarantino and something about Dutch, something to do with the Netherlands. And I said, well, actually, the Netherlands, blah, blah, blah. Orange is the color, like their national team wears for football. And so I can't remember exactly what it was. But anyway, so they were really gracious, really polite and welcoming when I called in. And of course, you know, the first time you call into a show, you're a bit nervous and, you know, I geeked out hearing my voicemail on air and how welcoming they were. So it became a thing. Yeah, you and I would call every week, and it seemed like you and I were the super fans of that show until Demise came along. you know, we would call in every week, and then we would get on the Pop Syndicate boards, and we would just be go, 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 go. And, you know, Tough Guy Cinema, Bronson, Mifune, we were both a fan of, and Ninja films from the 80s, like American Ninja. And yeah, I'd always, and since I'd known about this outlet called a podcast, I was like, man, I really want to do a podcast because I feel like people aren't doing action films. People aren't doing Asian films other than some Chambara, like some of the Lone Wolf and Cub or Lady Snowblood ones. People aren't doing anything other than specific Shaw Brother titles. Yeah. Unless they're only doing Asian films.
They're basically doing, yeah, unless they're only doing Asian films, basically people were doing like top 10 Kung Fu films, you know.
Yeah, where I wanted to dig deeper, and I thought there was and, you know, just do some art house stuff. I just combine everything because I felt, you know, like you did, like, I loved film, and I just wanted to kind of get into everything and expose more people to some of the shit that I loved and of course, that you loved later on that when I found out we were going to do it. So I had a friend of mine here, Spiros, who you've met. You've ate with and had an upset stomach over eating so much with.
Yes.
In the meat sweats.
yes.
But
man, we ate a lot of meat that night.
Oh, we did, man. A lot of meat. A lot of tzatziki with our meat.
Ooh.
So a lot of good Greek food. So I was going to do them with Spiros, but I kind of felt like, see, he's going to turn me on to Westerns. But anyway, that's another story. But I just kind of felt like I wanted someone who would be turning me on to stuff as much as I was turning them on to stuff.
Yeah.
To be more reciprocity or kind of a balance in the relationship. And I thought, well, you know, maybe it's not the thing. And then you and I, kind of, that was right around the time when you and I were really hitting it off. And I thought, fuck, I'm going to ask Samurai. Or Samurai. It was just Samurai then. That's right. It was just Samurai.
Yeah.
It was the Samurai guy because we get along quite well. And who's to say we can't do it? So, yeah, we this was like in the late spring, like a May or something.
Yeah.
We talked it over. We both ordered podcast equipment from BSW. The starter kit's still what we both use.
Yes.
And you got yours before me because they tried to clip me like $100 for shipping. So I was like, fuck this. I'm sending it back. And so you had time to play with your equipment, which is how you kind of fell into a lot more of the heavy lifting on the technical side because you had more experience. So, yeah, then over that summer leading into TIFF and everything, we talked almost every day because we worked the same shifts. It was kind of serendipity. And then, you know, here we are literally on the cusp, knocking on the door of 4 years later.
Jesus.
You know, through three kids, school, 70, 60-hour work weeks, and here we are. I mean, week after week after week doing something we love, and I'm really proud and happy of the community that we've built, and then in turn that we've had a lot of wonderful people help build.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's been so many great people along the way that have helped us do this and really get this going from Aaron to everyone. I mean, God, there's too many names to mention, and that's how it happened.
Yeah, that is. And you bring up a good point. I mean, we've kind of built this thing where, you know, we have these other members that, you know, they don't do the podcast on a weekly basis, but they through their own merit, through their own time.
And through their own things that they contribute.
Yeah, they want to be part of it. And we're always touched by that. You know, where Aaron's a big part of what we do.
Huge part.
Brian or Rupert Pupkin. Who's very big in the internet world anyway, movie-wise. He's a big part of what we do. He's kind of been busy doing other things as of late, but he's still a big part behind the scenes of stuff we do and still really pushes us on people and still a very dear friend of the show, even though I know you guys haven't heard from him as much.
No, yeah, but he's still it's been a scheduling thing, but he's still very much part of it. I mean, Todd, Chad, Justin, everyone that's written for us, That's people that have done interviews, like David, that really great interview we just had from him. I mean, just God, we've been so lucky
to
have so many people. And, you know,
we've opened the door, which is, you know, always nice. And I should say, you know, we got a lot of help in the beginning from Philippe and DZ and
Bill OTC.
Bill from OTC has been a huge help.
Essential that they should not be left out of this conversation because early on we were helped to a very good listenership. They were both gracious enough to open their listenership up to us and promote guys that really were just fans of their show. And they promoted the hell out of us. And we hit the ground running with great listenerships because of OTC and CD. So because of that, I mean, we'll always be indebted to those guys. Our show and OTC show is very different. But I'll always love and appreciate what Bill did. And Chris wasn't around then. That's the only reason Chris went down. Or else Chris would have been in there too, because Chris is a wonderful guy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I'll always appreciate what Bill did for us. I mean, just really push us and help us get a listenership early on. So.
Yeah, Bill did a lot for us, and
absolutely,
I'm always thankful for that. And, you know, Bill doesn't come on the show much anymore and blah, blah, blah. Again, that, but that's because his lifestyle and our lifestyles just don't mix right now. He also had a child recently, so he's busy in a different way. And they do stuff differently than we do it. But I'm still in constant communication with Bill. I'm constantly text him with him and stuff. And we should also not leave out Miles, who's a big part of
a huge part
of all of this too.
Short Show was another show that I listened to early on that was definitely an inspiration and admiration, you know, certainly.
Yes, exactly.
For what they do. So, I mean, let's not forget how long they've been going too. So many people. We could just sit here and kind of recount all the people that we're appreciative for and sort of indebted to for what we do, whether it's creatively or who've done some lifting for us or otherwise.
Yes. So we've been very lucky, and that was another thing. When we created this thing, we both agreed that creating a community was what we wanted out of it, not yep. so much just having a podcast and being quote unquote popular, or internet popular for that matter, internet celebrities, the celebs that we have nowadays. We didn't just want to be that. We wanted to make sure we had the community, and that kind of came off, as we just said, basically that kind of came off even more robust than we even expected. So that's been the most rewarding part of it. And, you know, I know you guys have heard it say it 1,000 times, but I just still can't get enough of it. I mean, I get hit up almost daily by somebody in our community, telling me they either love the show, they love the idea, asking for film recommendations, asking if they can post something on the blog, asking if they can do an interview. I mean, so much stuff, and it's touching. It really is that they think of us to do that. Because Dave could have taken that conversation with Andy Gill. He could have taken that anywhere. And Rupert, who's done a lot of interviews for us, he could have taken those anywhere. He could have published them himself. He knows how to do that. So
he could have. Aaron was gracious enough to post stuff he did, whether it was Rumley or otherwise.
Oh, you know who somebody we're leaving out? Stefan. We should better not leave out Stefan.
Yeah, Stefan played a big part helping guide us from behind the scenes. He gave us a place to have a board, a message board back in the Palaver days. So that was a big deal.
Yeah, so that's basically it. Hopefully that's a nice, robust history and stuff. And everything else has pretty much been on the air. All the history's been on the air, but that's pretty much it. I hope Bernie is happy with that, because we spent 45 minutes on our intro this morning.
What's that?
We spent 45 minutes on our intro this morning. It's the longest intro we've done since back in the day, bruh.
Yeah, we don't have much time for reviews.
That's okay. That's okay. We'll get through the reviews and stuff. But anyway, that's it. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that little walk down memory lane. It's always fun to talk about.
It is, and I'm telling you, we could spend an episode just kind of recounting stories and anecdotes and things. And it'd be good. And I should say, now the sniffing in this episode is now going to get exponentially increased, because I'm now officially on the medicine ball.
Yeah, pretty soon the lines of white powder will start being sniffed.
Did you hear what Matt Suzaka?
That, and I remember Mike White's post. Do you need a tissue?
Yeah.
Would you like a tissue, please?
I'd love one. I'd love to have a tissue.
You use it for your nose. I use tissue for something else while we're recording. To clean up some white lines. Some white rope.
Some white rope, exactly.
All right, well, that's a brief history of the GGTMC on episode 197. Getting ever so close to episode 200 of this wonderful show. All right, so we're going to take a break, come back and talk about what you want to talk about first. I have more notes for Dr. Jekyll than I do the hidden, but whatever you want, whatever you're in the mood for.
Why don't you do that, and I'll try to get adjusted so I'm not sniffing too much. So why don't we do Dr. Jekyll? You can want to lead on it then?
Yeah, I'll lead on.
That'd be fun. Okay.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back right after this.
This is Alyssa from Big Red Podcast, inviting you to listen to our show about pop culture, TV, and cool stuff that we talk about every week. Right, Derek?
Well, you know you love it, and we talk about it.
And if you haven't been listening, here's what you've been missing out on.
And by a lot, I mean there are several shows to talk about, none of which were especially good.
You know, it seems mostly what I'm learning is a lot of things to take a lesson from One Tree Hill, and I never thought I'd say that.
He also has a magnificent head of hair.
Yes.
Why, thank you.
Naked Viking, whatever.
And as with Lost, the flashbacks aren't interesting at this point.
I'm just hoping that it won't break my heart like Heroes.
Like punch a dinosaur in the face.
Yes, the mother was insane and bizarre and apparently high, I'm guessing.
I learned a lesson today about karma.
The man who can't feel pain shouldn't be dealing with hot liquids and whatever.
Right, heating old man, and why are you not winning?
So listen to Big Red Podcast if you like TV and junk on TV, because we totally watch it and talk about it, so you don't have to. Find us at BigRedPodcast.com or check us out in the iTunes store.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. Going a little old school 80s metal there with some Motley Crue, baby.
Fucking love that album. Love the song. I've never told you this. Motley Crue is my favorite band growing up.
Oh, nice, nice. Didn't know that. How about that?
Yeah. I wanted to be a drummer because of Mr. Tommy Lee.
Sweet, yeah, yeah. And all the benefits that brings if you got the legendary flesh drumstick.
Well, I knew we had one thing in common.
That song, even though it's not in The Hidden, completely reminds me of the music in The Hidden.
Oh, totally.
So, I was watching The Hidden last night, and I was like, ooh, I know what song I'm going to play.
Nice.
It's like, 1, 2, 3, 4. All right. And, rock and roll, here we are. All right, so we're going to do Dr. Jekyll and His Women first. You want to synopsize this one, and I'll take the lead on it, if you would like so much. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I would love to, as I struggle to not clear my throat and sniffle on air. I'm going to synopsize it. This is, of course, a Valerian Borichek film. Pretty famous in some circles, loved in some circles.
Incredibly controversial in others.
Yeah, absolutely. A Polish filmmaker who did a lot of work in France, which I think is very obvious based on his aesthetic and a lot of the stuff he did. I don't think I've seen actually anything else he's done, despite being familiar with him. I may have seen one or two. I can't remember. I'd have to take a look at his filmography. But this film, to synopsize, wow, Michael at everyman.demon.co.uk typed a long one. The film takes place before, during, and immediately after the engagement party of Dr. Henry Jekyll and Miss Fanny Osborne. Attended by numerous highly respectable guests, the last of which informs the company that a child has been murdered in the street outside. While the others watch, a young dancer performed, Dr. Jekyll instructs a lawyer to alter his will, giving everything to a certain Mr. Hyde. And shortly afterwards, someone is found murdered, and the guests realize one of their number must be a maniac with a prodigious sexual appetite.
Yes, which the sexual appetite is pretty common for Valerian Borichek films. Okay, so let me give you a little bit of a background on Borichek. He is known as an erotic artist, made a lot of short films, and was a painter as well. And then when he started making features, he didn't make a whole lot. He had a lot of acclaim in the beginning with films like Go to Island of Love and Blanche and Immoral Tales and stuff like that. And then he infamously made The Beast, which also is known as La Bête.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I have seen La Bête.
Yeah. And in most circles, he kind of got blackballed by that one. Because it does deal with perversion a little bit and some darkness and some things that make people uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And but in other countries he became even more vindicated, even more so by his
revered.
Yeah, he became even more so. But he is a tough filmmaker in some ways, transgressive in some ways, and yet in some ways gentle. It's very strange. I wanted to read this personal quote he has on IMDb because I think this pretty much says everything about Borichek's filmography and where he comes from. So this will kind of give you an idea if you're looking to jump into his world where he stands. This quote says, "Eroticism of sex is one of the most moral parts of life. Eroticism does not kill, exterminate, encourage evil, or lead to crime. On the contrary, it makes people gentler, brings joy, gives fulfillment, and leads to selfless pleasure." So if you know that about Borichek, you pretty much know his whole filmography. Eroticism is very, very, very important to Mr. Borichek. So, or was very, very important to Mr. Borichek. So, all right. So I'll get into this one a little bit. Now, this one stars the one and only Udo Kier. I don't know. Has he been? Surely he's been on our show.
I was wondering that as well. In fact, that was one of my notes. I can't think of anything off the top of my head that he has been in. Clearly someone who's attained such cult status. Oh!
Seems like we've done something where he's popped up.
Yeah, what did we do that he was in?
I mean, with 200 credits, it's almost impossible.
And almost 200 episodes. I always forget. Was he in... He's in Suspiria. He's in... what's the Argento that he's in? He plays like the...
the doctor. Is it God? Which one is it now? I'm kind of drawing a blank on this.
I don't even know if we've done that one. I don't think we have.
He plays like a doctor, an expert, and
trauma. No, not a trauma.
No, it's an earlier effort than that.
Well, that's a trauma. That's a different trauma from there.
Anyway, I know he's worked with Argento, but no, maybe he hasn't been on the show, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah, and he's an interesting actor. He's essentially one of these type of actors who will do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Films from The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Miss Osborne, Andy Warhol's Frankenstein and Dracula films, one called Spermula. He is in Suspiria.
Then it's probably Suspiria that I'm thinking of, because I think Jessica Harper goes to see him.
Yeah.
Yeah, she goes to see him and the older gentleman who's an expert on, not alchemy, on like witches and black magic and stuff, I think at the university. And because they have that little meeting, that picnic table type thing. Anyway, yeah.
He's actually in a film called Prince Valiant.
Well, ironically for you.
Yes. anyway, I love Udo. I don't think Udo's like the greatest actor in the world, but I will say Udo has one of the great faces in cinema history.
Oh, definitely.
He's at least one of the more interesting actors I can think of off the top of my head who's done just about any kind of film you can imagine Udo's been in, from popcorn films. I mean, even Ace Ventura films, for Christ's sake. I mean, he's done – there's just about no genre that Udo has not been involved in. He's one of those type of character actors, right? So, but it also has Marina Piero, I think is how you say her name. Piero. She was in a few
in my dreams.
Yeah, she's a lovely lady. She's in a few other Borchek films, and then Patrick McGee. I think it's McGee, but it might be Maggie. I don't know, but I think it's McGee. I'll go with that. Who in this film, it should be said, doesn't understand that subtlety is proper acting. I don't think.
Exactly.
He really goes over the top as the general. He was in infamously. He's the husband of the rape victim in Clockwork Orange. And he worked with Kubrick a few times. One of the few actors who worked with Kubrick on multiple films. So he's one of those guys. Anyway, and that's that. Okay, so like I said, sex and eroticism were critical to Borchek's work. This one's kind of set in the Victorian era, even though it's really all a chamber piece. It's all one house, one set. Very moodily lit, it should be said. A lot of backlighting. Very dark film. The transfer I saw was very dark. And it should be said this is available at CDB because it's next to impossible to find.
So, yeah, it is. I think a lot of Borchek stuff is.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, he's just not really that. Again, he's controversial, so it's not. I know Labette is pretty attainable. Well, there used to be a very expensive collector's edition of Labette, but I don't know if it's attainable now. It might be out of print. But Immoral Tales, I think, is available quite easily as well. Anyway, but so this is basically almost like a costume genre, in the costume genre, which is a genre we don't really do much because really outside of gothic horror films, there's not really a lot of midnight movie type of films in the costume genre. These kind of chamber pieces with the puffy shirts and the corsets and all these things. We don't do a lot of that. This might actually be one of the first times we've done this outside of like Vampire Circus or something gothic like that, right?
Yeah, and I'm not really a fan of costume period pieces. I really don't like them.
Yeah. I don't mind them as much, but I do find that when they're bad, they're really bad.
Oh, fucking drier than Melba toast.
But when they're good, they're fine for me, and so it don't really bother me. But anyway, the movie's tone is strange, and I don't know if it's because of the dubbing or not, but it's almost kind of silly in the beginning, and then it's kind of serious, and then it's erotic, and it's very strange. It's got a very strange tone to it, and it almost feels like a film that was trying to find its way as it went along. I've never seen this film before the show. Let me full disclosure here. So even though I am a fan of Borchek's work, I never had seen this. So it was kind of interesting to do this one because this is a bucket list film, I guess you could call it. The music in the film is also kind of weird because it's both moody at times and it works perfectly, and then sometimes it's overbearing as all hell.
But I like its overbearing nature. I think the score is one of the most effective parts of this film.
Yeah, there's this great...
Because it's very unconventional.
Yeah, there's this great like keyboard sting, right?
There's a keyboard sting. There's almost like someone. Yeah, there's. It's very comparable to the synth in the beginning of The Warriors.
You reminded me like it reminded me like Gaspar Noé films now.
Yeah, absolutely Noé, and there's this sound that's used as like a piece of music where it's almost like a finger rubbing the rim of a glass.
Yeah, fingers rubbing the rim of something.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Maria Piro's wet ass. It should be said, I know that Noé is a fan of Borachek, so I think you can see that.
Yeah, definitely.
You can see it in some of the erotic stuff. I think Noé may have taken it one step further. I mean, Borachek would have been like, dude, you don't show that much.
Yeah.
Which is saying a lot when you see the beast.
Oh, yeah.
You have dripping, dripping beast cock in the film. The movie runs a bit slow in spots. I think, you know, obviously this is Borachek's interpretation of the Robert Louis Stevenson story of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And I like his take on it because there's one shot in this film that I really, really love. And it's inarguable, even if people don't like this film and they see this film and they think they thought it was pretty, you know, either boring or they thought it was kind of something else or they were looking for something else. Because it's, like I said, essentially a one set piece film. It's shot in a big mansion or a large house. Everybody shows up. It's almost like a 10 Little Indians thing.
Yeah, I guess it is really.
Yeah, and like a slasher film too, sort of, right? Except, yeah, kind of like a slasher film, but not very violent like a slasher film. There's more guns and strange acting choices. But the interpretation of the way the transformation takes place is interesting, especially considering the way the transformation takes place. There's a scene in here where I'll be honest with you, it's old school magic, and I don't really know how they pulled it off.
Which scene?
The scene where Udo Kier goes underwater.
Oh, yeah.
And he's underwater for about 30 seconds, and the camera never cuts away, and then Mr. Hyde comes out of that same water, and it's a different
person. Oh, with the eyes and everything?
Yeah, and it's a different person. It's a different actor.
Who
comes out of the water saying my favorite line, fill me with hatred. So it's awesome. But he comes out as a different actor, and I'm thinking, where the hell did Udo go? Is he still underwater? Because, I mean, then that actor proceeds to stay in the pool or in this tub and rub this Coca-Cola all over.
Basically, yeah. Like flat Coke.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. Rubs it all over himself for about another 30, 40 seconds. So I'm either thinking Udo really knows how to hold his breath, or they pulled a cut, and because of the transfer, I didn't see the cut. I'm thinking it's more the second thing, but it's a pretty impressive shot, and if it is done that way, all in camera, it's seriously old school movie magic shit, and pretty impressive stuff. Because, like I say, he goes underwater. About 30 seconds go by, the water's just kind of moving, and then all of a sudden you start to see an ass, and you think that's Udo's ass, or one of his cheeks of his ass, and he's going to come back up, but it's a totally different actor with a major short Prince Valiant haircut, no eyebrows, and. A very sharp scimitar-shaped penis.
Jesus, that is such a scimitar of a penis, and the hair is the most extreme and short Prince Valiant of all time. It's just no one, I don't care who you are, Brad Pitt, Lenny Kravitz, anyone, no man could pull that hair off.
It looks like a Friar Tuck haircut.
Oh, God, it's so terrible.
It's pretty bad. It's a rough haircut. But anyway, I like the Hyde character because it's a different actor, but he does look like he could be a genetic mutation of Udo Kier. Now, I enjoy the story of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde quite a bit, and I even enjoy the song by Men at Work called Dr. Heckle and Mr. Jive, I think. So.
I don't know that song.
I think it was them. God, I hope I'm right. I sound like an asshole. Anyway, basically that's because, as you guys know, I'm a big werewolf fan. I'm a big fan of man, and by man I say the race of humanity finding its primal side. There's, you know, the civilization takes away all of our primal instincts, right? So even though we have them still, and they kind of come out in sex and violence and these things that we watch in films and read in stories, those primal instincts, civilization tries to teach us how to control those, or does in a lot of cases it does teach us how to control those, obviously, or we would have no civilization. But I'm a big fan of that. The lack of morality that a beast gives you is interesting to me, because animals don't have morals, correct?
That's correct.
So that's what's interesting to me, because human beings are essentially, in my opinion, we are essentially hairless apes, but we are intelligent enough to teach ourselves these morals and raise our children certain ways. And it's where things like religion come in and you know, things like that, that teach us these ways of being and that help civilization move forward. But I'm always interested in somebody reverting back to their most primal state. And in this case, the Hyde character is a sexual deviant who I think at one point stabs another gentleman with his penis in the abdomen.
Yeah.
So, there we go. And almost rapes his mother. Or it looks like he's attempting to rape his mother. Or at least tear her leg off. Does rape the daughter of the general in front of the general, and then the general uncomfortably whips his daughter's bare ass, which is another taboo being broken, I guess, or broken. We'll tell him what went on in that history.
Yeah, it is a strange scene.
Yeah, it is a strange scene because she spends a lot of time with her father, but bare-chested. It's like...
Yeah, and then there's like some arrows in that scene, too.
Yeah, there's some poison-tip arrows coming to play. Mm-hmm. Poison-tip arrows from the Dark Continent.
Yes.
So, but you hear such things of dialogue in here, like there's a virgin that they're doing an autopsy, body autopsy, and they're talking about the circumference of the penis, the perforated stomach from the size and length of the penis, from this rape that took place. She died, obviously, from internal bleeding. This is the first time you hear about the scimitar-shaped penis. So, I mean, Borchek's basically getting, you know, through to you by saying that, you know, sex is a violent act. It's a beautiful act and everything, but it's also an act of violence in some ways. They can be ugly, but it's the ugliness comes from our lack of not being able to deal with sex, honestly.
That's right.
Which is still a problem in modern culture. It's still a problem.
It will always continue to be.
Yeah, it always will be, right? Because pleasure... is something, for some strange reason, it's something a lot of people in humanity can't deal with, so they choose to say it's immoral.
Mm-hmm. And try to stuff it down beneath the surface and quell it.
Yeah, we always try to keep it below the surface, and as we all know personally, pleasure is extremely pleasurable. But there's a lot of shame involved in the way a lot of people are raised with pleasure.
Yeah, because confronting things honestly... that we've internalized is not a strong suit of humans.
No. And like anything, even though, you know, pleasure is a great thing, like anything, though, it can be dangerous, because if you over-pleasure, if all you seek in life is pleasure, you can hurt others around you or, you know, ignore things that are important in your life and you don't even realize it.
Yes.
So like a drug, like anything else, pleasure can be dangerous. This asks Bob Crane. Anyway, Hogan's Heroes. Yeah. You know, so... but yeah, like I say, there's a lot of messages like that going on, and this is typical of Borchek's work. Humanity's struggle with pleasure, sexuality, immorality. So, interesting stuff. Like I say, Patrick McGee is really going all out in this one. I mean, he is really acting. I mean, he's really going over the top. He's doing the shaking jowl acting. You know that kind of acting I'm talking about, where you make the face and you move your head side to side, and you know, the tissue of your face is moving too. it's like, wow, man, he's really going for it. Somebody needs to tell this dude to calm down, but he never does.
Take it down a notch, bro.
He never does. He's essentially doing the scene in Clockwork Orange where he's looking at the camera with the Stanley Kubrick pose and he's shaking his head side to side because he's realized that Malcolm McDowell's character is the one that raped his wife. Is great. It's like he's taking that little look and that shaking, like convulsing, almost like epileptic fit he's having in Clockwork Orange, and he's bringing that to all of his scenes of this film and the way he talks,
yep,
and everything. So anyway, so let me get to some of the drawbacks of the film. There is a lot, and when I say a lot, there is a fucking ton of running through the house material in this
in
film.
In a darkly lit house. I like the lighting because I'll tell you this. I feel like the film is very much a surreal film. It feels very dreamlike by intent. I think it's lit starkly at times. It's supposed to be moonlight other times. It's overlit with like almost like floodlights at other times. But there's something just dark and a lot of running through the house, man.
Yeah, there's a lot. Here's the problem. If the running through the house stuff, I've always talked about this, but really good filmmakers, and Borchek is a good filmmaker, but really good filmmakers know how to give the viewer geography of a location.
Yes.
This film doesn't give you very good geography. You understand that there's an upstairs and there's a downstairs, there's a lab and there's a couple of bedrooms, but you don't understand where everything is in relation to everything else. And I think that's a true fault of the film.
But I have to wonder if that was more intentional, because I think Borchek, from what I've read, and even what I can assume based on this, if it was intentional to disorient, to not really have a sense of placement or logic.
It could be. It could be. I mean, I could totally see that.
With you in terms of generally wanting my film to have geography, because it's important. It's something that's overlooked a lot with filmmakers. But I think with a film of this kind, it would seem to be more intentional, because Borchek did not seem to be a hack.
Right, right, yeah. By this point, he was struggling to make films a little bit more than he was before. You all right, buddy?
Yeah, I just saw a picture accidentally of something I didn't want to see. So
don't. Well, then, if you're making that noise, please don't send it to me.
I won't. It was awful. Ugh. It smells like. Ugh, I don't want to say it.
I don't even want to talk about it. But anyway, so I had some issues with that stuff because there's just so much of it, and I wanted more interaction with the Hyde character, because even though you do see some things and some things he does, and I know this sounds awful, but I wanted more of the violence of the Hyde character, the sexual violence and the deviant behavior of him. You see quite a bit of it, but not really until you see the true transformation does the Hyde character become even more prevalent in the film. And some of the decisions that the Fanny Osborne character, Piero character, makes are interesting and stuff, and I wish they would have dealt more with that. I do think that the back end of this film, once Hyde really comes into being, even though theologically it's not as interesting as the first half, I think it's more interesting modern cinema-wise. Like, it's starting to get into the action-packed stuff, starting to get into the sexual violence now, it's starting to get into the point that Borchek's trying to make. He establishes all this theological talk about, evolution and the other side of humanity, and there's a priest there, and he's talking about stuff.
Yeah, because it's very much high society mm-hmm. at the dinner table, talking about science and faith and society and everything.
Yeah.
Which I think anytime you get an Eastern Bloc filmmaker, because he grew up in the former USSR, I always think that a lot of this stuff, whether it's Zulofsky or another filmmaker of that neck of the woods, Eastern Bloc, a lot of times it's them with the idea and the notion of freedom of thought and freedom of speech and being able to get their ideas on film.
Right, right.
Or just it's exciting to get ideas on film.
So they... What was I going to say? So
sorry, I hope I didn't.
No. I'm trying to think where I want to take this now. But anyway, yeah, like I was saying, I like the back end of the film more than the front end. And usually with films like this, when it comes to discussing man's primal state and all that kind of stuff, I really like that stuff. But I think the dubbing hurts this one just a little bit. With some of the stuff that's the way it's set. Udo Kier's voice did bother me, but...
I think his did, but that's because I know Kier's voice. The other ones, I have to say, I had no problem with, and I felt were reasonably well dubbed.
Well, I think McGee's was... McGee or whatever he's like say. I think that was his voice. But, Kier's is obviously... Because you know Kier's voice, he has... As much as his face is recognizable, he also has a very recognizable voice and accent, the way he speaks. And if you're familiar with his work. And because of that, it was always kind of strange whenever the Kier character would talk. I'd be like, yeah, that's not Udo. But anyway. The pure pleasure motif comes from Borchek, obviously. A creature that believes in pure pleasure as a way to get through life. That's why I read that quote from him. You know, it's obvious he identified more with Hyde than with Jekyll. And, you know, that is what the story is basically about, is, you know, Hyde's primal nature. In cinema, he's always kind of been the demon killer of some sort, the dark side of Dr. Jekyll, but also I think Stevenson was trying to get a point across as well back in the day that, you know, we are all capable of these things. We just choose not to do them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And any of us, no matter how righteous we think we are or how smart we think we are, any of us can revert to it.
Perfect. Succumb to primal-based desires.
Exactly. Perfect example. Something happens to your child. Something happens to your wife. I don't care how civilized you are. Civility goes away.
Mm-hmm.
An instant primal instinct takes over. Somebody attacks my wife or my son. You know, I might get killed in the process, but I'm going down with a fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the primal nature kicks in regardless. And the only thing holding me back from doing that is that I don't want to do that. I'm choosing not to be that person. Now, some people, it's very odd, but it's true. Some people choose to be the other person all the time. And we consider those people criminals and blah, 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 and a lot of them are, but some of the things, you know, it can become a gray area because some of the things you got to factor in is the way people are raised, the way people are taught, the culture change. Some cultures don't believe like we believe, blah, blah, blah. You get Christianity moving in. Then the subject gets really deep, right? It starts getting into colonization and, well, we could go on forever about that. So, but yeah, that's my thoughts on Dr. Jekyll and the women, though. I mean, I think it's a... It's a good film, but a little bit, maybe a little bit of a challenge for some.
I would agree with that. The film's not for everyone. It's very much European art house. You know what's strange? This is actually my first Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde film.
Hey, about that.
Obviously, being a horror fan, very familiar with the folklore, but. I'm not saying that this theme, because this theme's revisited in a lot of films.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, any werewolf film is essentially also a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde film, right? So.
Right, exactly. But to first, in title, to say Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, I love that I think one of the men who worked in the film, either the DOP or one of the composers, his name was Bernard Parmigiani.
Well, hey, I'm glad his music wasn't cheesy.
but the film is very dreamlike, very surreal. Some filmmakers have a knack for capturing the illogical and sometimes uncomfortable and sort of impending dread feeling and dream feel in films. David Lynch, some people just have a knack for it. And clearly Boricek does. Monocled men aplenty in this house.
Yes, indeed. A monocle. As a person who wears corrective lenses and actually prefers them to any other form of corrective eye stuff, the monocle has always been something that drives me batty. I can't imagine wearing a monocle all the time.
Yeah, highly impractical. I gotta say, man, I really loved Fanny. Oh God, I wanted to see her naked. And I think
he teases you more with her than he actually shows her naked. I mean, you see a wet ass, wet pubic area, and you see her breast, but he teases you more than he gives you, which is kind of rare for Boricek because usually he gives you a lot. But
mm-hmm.
She's very much a tease. I agree with you. She's gorgeous.
And I'm going to guise that or alibi that by saying Boricek's intent discussing man and his base needs were at work with that. Because were they at work, let me tell you. So the film feels like it's shot very voyeuristic, too,
mm-hmm.
which I think must have been intentional, talking about sexuality and so forth. And the voyeurism thing is interesting to me because I have to wonder how much of it is, there's times when it feels like, is it him saying the state Big Brother is always watching? Is it people who can't act because they're restricted by society our government not watching, so they're or not acting, so they're watching? Is it as a matter of a simple perversion of voyeurism?
Yeah.
You wonder all these things when you get an intellectual filmmaker who deals in sometimes more seedy elements in films.
Mm-hmm.
Or what things mean when they're putting things in films, whether it's a shot of an inanimate object, how much does that mean to this director who's lived in a completely different culture or society than we've become accustomed to? I love the shots that it cuts to early on of a woman, and this pays off at the end of the film, a woman furiously stabbing a man, penetrating him.
Yeah, obviously.
And bent over, very much an act of penetration.
Yeah, obviously there's something going on there.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, he takes high society, and you know he's going to smear them in the dog shit brutality before the film's over.
Yeah, because, you know, that's the real dichotomy of the film, right? I mean, he's trying to say that, you know, you think you're civilized. You think that, you know, you've got it all figured out. But the primal state of humanity always takes over. And, you know, I think there's a lot being said there because, you know, civilized society likes to believe that they do have it all figured out. But you only have civility. The only way you ever have civility is through violence. If you think about it, the only reason why we have any of the freedoms we have is because of violence. Because of wars, battles, blah, blah, blah. Almost everything comes from violence. It's kind of going back to the age-old thing that even childbirth is a violent act.
Right.
I'm looking at nude pictures of Marina Piero while you're talking, so.
Nice.
Just to kind of give everybody a background of, we definitely need to do some more Piero films.
Yeah, man. She did some Jean Rollin, which might be the jump-off point then.
Yeah, the Living Dead Girl, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And very bourgeois. I mean, these people, we see them talking about their possessions and their trinkets and just stuffing their faces with dessert and all sorts of excess. It just feels like every character in the film, it feels like there's this dark sense of perversion, malice, and almost like an underlying cruelty or something cruel on the precipice of cruelty. With every character in the film, it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
It was just foreboding, I guess, would be a more apt description. What else do I got? Not a whole lot. I mean, the dread's really palpable by the end of the film. Like I said, I love the score. It's very unconventional, but I just find it works quite well. Yeah. So, yeah.
What I also find interesting is that the way he decides to end the film is one of those endings that, you know, it's up for interpretation, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And I really like the scene between Keir and Miss Osborne.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that. And just the scene with Keir is when Oz, near the end when she's watching him.
Yeah. Has it ever been confirmed? Is Udo a homosexual or is he heterosexual?
He's just a good time guy.
Because
I don't know.
I can't ever really get a vibe from Udo. Sometimes I think because he's played homosexuals in films and he plays them so well. I mean, no offense to Udo, but I mean, like in, you know.
Or no offense to homosexuals.
Yeah, no offense to anybody, but I mean, I've always kind of thought that he possibly could be homosexual.
I don't know.
Maybe he's bisexual. That would probably make more sense.
Yeah.
Because he seems like a, like you said, he seems like a good time kind of guy.
Yeah, he does. I don't know. He's,
I know it's a strange conversation, but I'm just wondering if you've ever gotten that vibe. I've kind of gotten the vibe before. Maybe it's just because I've seen him play homosexuals in films before, and I thought, man, my thought process of what a homosexual is like sometimes would be what Udo, and then, you know, not to pigeonhole him, obviously. I'm like the Blue Oyster. Bum, 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 bum. But, you know, just to say that he plays a middle-aged homosexual man very well. Like My Own Private Idaho is a good example.
Right. Yeah. I don't know, man. Who knows? We could Google it. I don't know.
We could, but I don't want to spend all my time this morning doing research if Udo's a homosexual or not. Right now, I'm still looking at Piero nude pictures.
I'm spent on better endeavors, certainly. But that scene with her watching him in the going in and out of the shadows in a transformation sequence is just mesmerizing. This film does feel very weird and kind of floaty, surreal, and kind of rudderless at times, but then it seems to ratchet things up, and it's always very palpable, this dread and unease, mm-hmm. Which I really like. The film gets more feverish as it goes along.
Yeah.
There's just some nasty scenes too, like an ankle being broken. Like, oh, I had to cringe at that.
Yes.
pretty rough stuff. I have to say, Henry has a very weak pimp hand.
He does.
Oh God, he needs to learn.
But inside Henry is a scimitar penis.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. And that's all my notes.
I do love the scene of the silhouette of the scimitar like penis rubbing up against the daughter's ass cheeks. Pure Borchek right there, man. Always trying to get a penis shot in.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, you know, you look at Piero and some of her glamour shots. I mean, this is a gorgeous lady. She really is.
Oh, yeah.
She is a specimen.
Finer than cherry wine.
Yeah, indeed. All right, so I'll make a break. I'm going to go with the transformation and the hide design. Fill me with hatred. I do like the hide design quite a bit. Of course, you know, he's a man after my heart with that Prince Valiant haircut. So, as we all know, I'm rocking that at HHW.
Yeah, man.
I'll be drinking Heinekens and wearing the Prince Valiant and the puffy shirt. bringing the ready whip.
Yeah, exactly. Your pants are going to do up with drawstring.
Yeah. And that drawstring won't be tied just in case. my MVP for the film is I'm going to go with McGee on this one because he's so over the top that it's kind of like unlike any performance I've seen in a while. It's almost Nicolas Cage era McGee or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, it looks like something Nicolas Cage would do, put on a general's costume and just overact like a son of a bitch. Mm-hmm. But I had fun with his character. He's like, "Lady, misfortune has led to misfortune. I have seemed to have killed your chauffeur." it's like, yeah, you just want to kill anybody. But I had some fun with his character. I did like Piero a lot in the film, too. And I like the motif of the film, actually. And of course, Piero. There's a lot to like. Piero is a gorgeous lady. If there's a weakness, I wanted more eroticism from Borchek, and I wanted more, I just wanted more of what I'm used to from him, which is pretty erotic stuff, and I wish I had a better transfer too, but that's, you know, this film is, like I say, hard to find, so it's not like, yeah, I can't complain too much. I mean, even the copy I watched from Cinemid, David Zarr had, I think, Greek subtitles on it, so.
Mine had Dutch.
Maybe it was Dutch. Don't know.
I can tell you that I wish Piero had to work more with George Eastman.
Yeah, there we go. Speaking of scimitar shaped penises. my score for the film, the running through the house stuff and everything really hurt the film for me. I'm gonna go 6.75 out of 10.
Okay.
Almost went 7, but I'm gonna go 6.75. It's a good film, but I think it's a challenging one, and I think if you're not in the mood for all this theological talk, and if you're like Emily, who doesn't really care for the dark side of humanity stories with the werewolves and things like that, you might not dig it at all. But it's good. It's a good film. It's definitely interesting, and I'm glad to scratch it off my bucket list, to say the least.
Nice. Very nice. Similar make or break is the voyeuristic transformation scene with Miss Osborne, good old Udo. MVT is just the feel, the mood of the film really worked well for me. And this film, like I said, is not for everyone, but if it catches you at the right time and it just kind of grabs you and it's kind of washes over you. My score's a little bit higher than yours. It's a 7.25. I really dug it, man. I'm definitely going to check out more Borchek.
Nice. Victorian era film, Large William likes. Everybody write this down.
Yeah, they're few and far between. I guess it needs to have scimitar-shaped cocks and lots of bush. But, no, it's a good one. It's, and I meant the bush. Yeah. No, it's a good film. It's very much what you think of when you think of European kind of art house cinema.
It is.
Certainly. But, I really dug it, man. I thought it was cool.
We should watch his Immoral Women film with the some cunnilingus performed by a bunny rabbit on Miss Piero. So.
Bunny rabbit?
He's very into the
bestiality.
He's very much into the taboo of bestiality. So something we don't talk about a lot on this film.
I have my kinks, hair on hair, actually, in my bag.
Hair on hair, that's good. I like that. But it does make my tortoise peek out. Ooh.
Well, you could mean that of a different German predilection. proclivity, shall we say.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The tortoise is speaking out.
But no, I don't think it's Piero. Maybe it's not Piero, but I do remember a scene in that film where an albino rabbit munching down on some...
on a carrot.
Well, not a carrot so much.
More maybe like, they had one in there.
Maybe more like some sliced carrots. All right. That's our thoughts on Dr. Jekyll. I'm surprised it took us this long to get that deviant for a film that is full of deviants. So, mm-hmm. All right. So that's our review of Dr. Jekyll or The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Miss Osborne, as is known on IMDb. The Bloodbath of Dr. Jekyll, as is known on CDB. And Dr. Jekyll and His Women, as is known in other circles. So check it out if you're interested in that kind of material. Again, you can get it at CDB. Go over, use our code. All right. We're going to take a break. Come back and talk about The Hidden, directed by Jack Shoulder. We'll be back right after this.
First the screen was silent, then it talked, then color. Now the greatest advance of them all.
Movie Meltdown. Come check out Movie Meltdown. News, reviews, and interviews about your favorite thing, movies.
Even better is it's going to be in 3D.
Awesome!
Yes!
Will they quit? For the love of God, putting Keanu Reeves and stuff.
No, they will not.
I don't like any of this.
Nobody does. It was bad anyway, but it got so much worse every time that horrible little CGI bastard was on the screen.
Random There's 3D boobies.
Naked. Yeah,
3D it's, running it's, around boobies.
I liked how quick it got to the violence.
Yeah,
it
didn't mess around.
Instantaneously, it was violence.
That's a good way to start a movie.
And blood. And I was like, yay.
Right on the video box, you could look at it and go, well, this is going to be crap. And then, all right.
Movie Meltdown. For movie geeks, by movie geeks.
It's revolutionary. It's exciting. It's newer than television. It's
Movie Meltdown.
Everybody, welcome back. A little more metal there. Playing some metal this week. Last couple weeks, been doing the metal thing. That one's got a little bit of a groove to it.
It's fitting for this film.
It is. Nobody ever gave me an answer on who that actress is in The Bloody Ape. Does anybody know why I was perhaps looking for a name? I was going to do a Google image search.
Mm-hmm.
Might be worth watching it just for that. You know how me and you are. We have a certain proclivity for certain... never mind. Let's not talk about that on the air. Anyway. Almost gave away something about my Jack Shoulder. All right, so I'll synopsize The Hidden here and let you discuss it. I'm caught with my...
pants down.
Well, if you look at our new Facebook page, there's some great new fashions there with the kind of side button pants going down the sides and stuff.
Those are pretty incredible.
Those are, man. I need a pair of those.
Mm-hmm.
And I love even more so the robe look. The full
the robe,
body.
The sort of tunic-y look.
Oh, man, that's fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. I'd wear that to Horror Hound in a Red Hot Minute. And nothing underneath.
You got it, man.
All right, so The Hidden is from Jack Shoulder, 1987. New Line Cinema. Really nice to see that logo at the beginning. That was a big part of the 80s and 90s for me was New Line Cinema, and I'm sure a lot of us.
Amen.
So a lot of us saw that. So this is definitely a Robert Shea production. And even got Lynn Shea in the film, it should be said. She's in there.
Yeah, a little bit the back end. Yeah, that's right.
So this one is, let's see, get a summary going here. Man, some people really type up plot synopsis. I really don't understand. We don't need this much, bruh. An alien is on the run in America. To get his kicks, it kills anything that gets in its way and uses the body as a new hiding place. I'll just say that. He's being chased by an FBI agent and also a cop, and he has a proclivity for fancy cars and metal music.
Mm-hmm.
So that's and Claudia Christian's ass.
Yes.
I used to have a thing for her.
Yeah, she kind of has a bit of a Jesse Spano / Joni Lahr.
The only issue I might have with her, she's a little man-tastic.
Little bit.
In the face, a little bit.
Little bit.
Yeah. Not as much as Jessica Biel, but...
oh, boy.
Here we go again. Well, she's coming up in a film called Watercolor Postcards, and if that doesn't sound like a porn film in some weird way, I don't know why, but it does to me. Anyway, let's see what you thought of The Hidden.
Yeah, so Jack Sholder, interesting filmmaker. I know him from doing Nightmare on Elm Street 2. He did a couple other things, which I don't really get into for time constraints. The writer, it should be said, Jim Koof, has been on our show before. The Boogans he wrote. What else did he write? Stakeout, which has also been on our show.
I think he's still working, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. He did Rush Hour, the National Treasure movies.
Yeah. So he's still quite... Oh, yeah, he's the guy that created the Grimm TV show, that new show, and that was the last thing I saw him a credit from him in. Yeah, he does a lot of TV creation nowadays, too, yeah. Okay.
He wrote The Hidden, too, which I never even knew existed.
I knew it existed, but I have never seen it.
It looks really painfully bad.
Does it?
Really, yeah. It's got a 2.5 on IMDb, which isn't usually a mark of... In fact, it's quite the opposite. Usually it's good if it's got a lower score, but this looks pretty painful. But anyway, we'll see. Anyway.
I didn't know Jim Cuff wrote and directed Disorganized Crime with Ed O'Neill. I didn't know that. I just found that out. How about that?
No, neither did I.
Wow.
I'd seen this film once, about almost 4 years ago. Time goes quick.
Yeah, this is one of the things we kind of talked about. This is a film we talked about on a phone or something, maybe.
Yeah, it was wild. I told you I was cutting my son's nails, and he's just a baby, William, that is, and he's almost four now. And I was watching this film one night, man, folding some laundry. I remember that night. I have the cardboard DVD of this.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's really old school. And nice, the clip case, right?
Yeah, but you know what's cool? I expect to look in the back and see, special features, interactive menus, and so forth. But it says in there commentary, interview. So there were some good special features on this disc for its time. So, other than, of course, the people behind the camera, the people in front of the camera, Kyle MacLachlan, of course, who, you know, he's probably loved by a lot of people for Twin Peaks, and Michael Nouri, who's most likely known for Flashdance, being Jennifer Beals, one of my favorites, her boyfriend. An interesting actor who even Jack Sholder, as you had said to me, other filmmakers, but even Jack Sholder says in the commentary that Michael Nouri is not easy to work with, which I guess explains why an actor who's good looking and has charisma and is reasonably talented as an actor didn't work more.
Yeah,
I think he's quite good.
He is a good actor, but he's notorious, very notorious, actually. I mean, we hear about these stories all the time, right? These actors like Val Kilmer, who's supposedly incredibly hard to work with. Just really stern and bullheaded, maybe it might be a word, actors who really have an opinion. And Nouri, evidently, I don't know this for a fact, but evidently from everything I've read, is possibly one of the most notorious.
Which seems odd. It's unfortunate. Yeah. But that's the way it goes.
You know what seems weird about it is because he doesn't really have like a lot of Hollywood pull.
No, that's what I mean. Like, okay, you were good, but do you really think you warranted that kind of behavior, Michael?
Yeah, I know. It's very strange. So.
Very bizarre.
But evidently, yeah, he's got some issues there.
Yeah, no, definitely. I remember when I first heard about this film, about 5 years ago, I remember thinking to myself, how have I not heard of this film? It's about an alien that loves Ferraris, Lamborghinis, Porsches, and metal music. How have I not heard of this?
No.
You know, it's one of those films that you're baffled, you've never heard of. So, I mean, it's got a really great opening. Even before it gets the initial action sequence, it's got like that closed-circuit TV opening with a man robbing a bank and shooting people with, of course, the shotgun.
Oh, yeah, I love that opening.
It's a fantastic opening, and it works really well within the film. And then it cuts right away to the Ferrari and the metal music, and a great car chase to open things up, really gets things off to a bang.
Mm-hmm.
It really opens up quite well. And I have to say, just full disclosure, this is a very solid piece of film, very competently made. And I think it's one that I unfortunately doesn't get enough credit or love from people. And hopefully by seeing this, a few more people will check it out and they can spread the word. And on it goes.
Yeah, it's definitely a cult film. It's kind of developed a cult following over the years and stuff. And it's warranted that. It's strange that it wasn't a bigger... Maybe because of the stars in it or something at the time?
The stars. Or it is a bit peculiar with aliens loving exotic cars and metal music. I mean, that's a bit of an interesting angle. But, you know, this would be a good double with They Live. You know, because certainly I will say this. This is, beyond its genre trappings, a smart film with some social commentary and talking about consumerism and so forth and branding and stuff, much like They Lived It.
Yeah. Ooh, nice little pun there. They lived it. Get it? You said it's like they live? Or
oh, no, I said they live.
Yeah, I know, but then you said they lived it, which is, I don't know.
Oh, no, like they live did.
Oh, okay, my bad.
Yeah. I can't take credit for that pun, sadly. But much like They Live was able to do, consumerism and some commentary and Reagan-era stuff. But yeah, the film was up, good stunts. It's well-written. It's well-acted. It's got an interesting hook for a film. Well-shot. Just all around really competently made. One of the things I like early on the film does in the opening car chase, which, like I said, get things off to a bang rather quickly, is it takes that convention of, you know, someone who is physically needy, like someone who's in a wheelchair or a baby or an old person. They take someone who's in a wheelchair, and instead of, you know, the usual thing of just being missed or, you know, them falling out of the wheelchair and the wheelchair getting hit, the alien full-on, like, smashes into this old dude in a wheelchair and, like, kills him, just splatters him. Not splatters him, but just wallops him.
Yeah, it kind of tells you the attitude of the film. It's like, yeah.
Absolutely it does. It's not going to pull any punches. All bets are off. And it becomes very early on, like, a Death Race 2000. Like, he's hitting everyone. He doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's great because the alien knows, even the aliens know that with deck shoes, there's no socks, bruh.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I liked it. The alien knew to come correct. Ferrari explosion. I have to wonder, there's some very nice, for the time, exotic cars in this. Like I said, four Ferraris, Lamborghinis, Porsches. There's even a couple Maseratis in the background and stuff. It's just insane that they were able to blow these cars up because these are not cheap cars. And the film has a pretty good budget, too. I mean, God, you know, very interesting. McLaughlin, I have to say, I love Blue Velvet. He's an actor, though, that, you know, inexplicably, I've always hated his face.
Yeah, he's got the very distinctive chin.
Yeah, I'd always hated his face, but in the past 4 or 5 years, I've kind of come around on him. Yeah.
He's got
because of this film, and he's an interesting actor, certainly.
Yeah, he's got this interesting kind of almost stiffness to his acting that I kind of like.
Which lends itself well to this film without revealing too much, although you can probably call it pretty early on, but,
yeah,
you know. Another great thing about this film is there's some really good practical effects in this that are kind of in line with The Thing, kind of partially The Thing, partially Night of the Creeps.
Yeah, Kevin Yeager.
Did Yeager do the effects?
Yeah, he did.
I didn't know that. I know, what's his name, Marty Brezen, who has worked on quite a few Hollywood films, and then also Eric Rylander, who did some of the effects work as well.
Yeah, somehow, some way, Yeager's credited, but now I'm looking through these credits on IMDb, and I'm not seeing his name. But I know I just watched the film last night. I know I saw Yeager's name.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? But
maybe he was a consultant. They are great because... Let me tell you something, okay? Let me tell you something, people. The little dog zombie here. I do not like slimy slugs coming from people's mouths.
Ugh.
That grosses me out so much. Mm-hmm. I can barely even talk about it. It just the gelatin that is on the slug that comes out of the person's mouth.
Ugh, the goo is very goopy.
It's so gross, man. It reminds me of that stuff. Now, this is a personal thing, but let me get it out there. It reminds me of it reminds me of the kind of jelly like substance that's in a can of sardines.
Ugh.
Which I know that sounds gross, but actually,
why are you even opening cans of sardines?
Well, I eat sardines. I can eat them. I used to eat them all the time. I don't eat them anymore, really. I like to put mustard on them. And
nice little
personal thing there. Eating sardines, though, let me give you a piece of advice. Don't ever eat them and go on a date. Not a good idea.
No,
not a good idea, bruh.
No, unless it's the daughter of a fisherman.
Yes, exactly. When you're down there like that bunny rabbit in Immortal Tales, and she's going, and she says, "Is that me?" And you know, that's a problem, bruh.
Yeah, and you got the Frenches or the Grey Poupon out.
Oh, wow. Shit.
We went there.
Yes, we did. Oh, man. Anyway, there's a stuntman in this film named Charlie Skeen. That's funny as hell.
Well, the stuntmen are on their keep on this. If you guys get hit by cars, pretty good.
Oh, man, that one dude, because they show him flip off and then they show him hit the concrete afterwards. He had like a cast on. I'm absolutely convinced they shot it like three times and he broke his arm the first time.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, yeah, that opening scene, those stunts, those two car stunts, those two people getting hit by cars, that's one of the most violent car hits I've ever seen in a film.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive, man. That's the thing. Right across the board, this film is good. Every aspect of this film is good. Even the actors, what happens is this alien, it jumps into people's bodies to act as a host. And everyone, they're kind of good as the glossy, just slightly disconnected alien, because the alien doesn't quite know how to act beyond basic things. Yeah, it works really well. And even McLaughlin, he's good and very kind of robot-like, which is good. Film's well shot, like I said. Sorry, I'm just trying to zip through my notes here. I love that guy. He's the black muscle at the Ferrari dealership. I can't remember his name. He's been in a lot of 80s films.
Yeah, what is that guy's name?
I think he played a trucker in The Wizard.
I think his name was black trucker. Eddie, and I think his real name is Dwayne Davis.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
He was in Ghost of Mars, man.
Nice.
I don't remember him in that, but he was in that.
I love the cocaine in the Ferrari dealership. So 80s, the white suit.
Oh yeah, yeah. You gotta have the cocaine in the 80s.
You do.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I love the limitations that the alien has in it when it's in certain hosts. Like one of the bodies it jumps into, the guy had a heart attack or he was sick in the hospital.
Yeah.
So I love that the body has limitations that the host or the host has limitations that the alien has to be aware of, because otherwise he's going to be in trouble.
Yeah, he's kind of, when he's in the old man's, guy with the heart problems and the gastritis, he's constantly trying to do things that he thought the younger body could have done. And
that's right.
That is some of my favorite parts of that. Also, I like the scene where when he's in Claudia Christian's body, I don't think it's giving away anything because we know it's an alien that jumps from body to body, but like he starts to fill his own breast and stuff like that. I like that shit.
Oh, yeah, that was great. That was great. Yeah, McLaughlin, to get back to him, he almost puts in, nowhere near as good, mind you, but almost like a Jeff Bridges Starman-esque performance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a few poignant moments with him for a genre film.
Yeah.
A few nice little touches with him. We got to do Starman on the show sometime. As you know, I'm a big fan. I think you are too. It's I'd say it's easily Carpenter's most underappreciated film.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
So good.
I'd love to talk about it. Yeah. I can't get no satisfaction.
There's a scene that's good, but the cynic in me has to be like, oh, God, that's so awkward and creepy. When McLaughlin is peering in at Newry with his wife, with the daughter, and McLaughlin's just staring at the daughter, and he's like, "You're a little girl. She's very special."
Yeah.
Ooh.
You know, I have to wonder sometimes, though. That's one of those moments where I wonder this now more and more. You know, we've become a culture that's so aware of child molesters now.
Yeah.
I often wonder, I mean, I don't think there was anything there. But,
no, of course there wasn't.
But I often wonder that now when I go back and watch films. I often wonder that.
Oh, no, I don't think there was anything. Because it harkens to something else that the character mentions. But I just,
right.
You know, the cynic in me, of course, can't help but kind of laugh at it. And it's unfortunate that we're at that.
Yeah, like, well, it's like if it's a YouTube clip out of context, right, it would totally give you that vibe.
Oh, yeah, totally. And so the trend of female leads as strippers in films but not stripping continues.
Yeah, she got a great, great caboose on her, and it's a shame we don't get to see more of it.
Yeah, it is. I love the neon slime, as Mr. Wings would say, of L.A. in this film.
I love L.A. in this film.
Yeah, L.A. is great in this film, man. Works really great. What also works great aesthetically, although Henry Silva would disagree, is the mannequin warehouse.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know. It's
a great mannequin warehouse.
He'd be turned on by Claudia, though.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, it's my kind of woman.
That's right, man.
These fake plastic people motherfuckers.
Yeah, he lights out. Silva would love the mannequin destruction.
Oh yeah, he would. I wrote down mannequins and exclamation marks because it's very, at this point, a GGTMC moment is anything with a mannequin, right?
So. Oh, very, very. And here's the thing, you know, talking about Claudia Christian, homegirl's good, but she ain't no Barbara Ann Constable.
No. She's got the tough looks.
Of course, Lady Terminator.
Yes, she's got the tough looks, like, you know, because she got kind of that hard jawline. Mm-hmm. And like we kind of joked around about being a bit fantastic and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I thought she was going to use her when I first saw this film. And full disclosure, the first time I ever saw this film, I did not like it.
No.
But I saw this film 20 plus years ago.
Okay.
The first time.
I didn't know that.
And yeah, I saw it.
You kept your hand close to the vest.
Yeah, and I didn't get into it. I knew some people who said they liked it, and I rented it on VHS. And I watched it, and I was like, hey, what's the big deal, man? I don't know what the big deal is. I like They Live more, and I like these other films more. But as time's gone on, this film has aged well for me.
Very much so.
And it's kind of a capture.
Very aware.
Yeah, it's kind of a capture of the late 80s, but at the same time, it's kind of a timeless story. It's a very simple story. So it really has aged well, and I've liked it more and more each time I've watched it, which is interesting because I often think about that sometimes. Sometimes you have these films you watch and you have this first reaction, and then, you know, it's almost like one of those threads we put on our Facebook page. What film did you see the first time and you hated or didn't like? And then, you know, 10 years later, you're like, you know what? I actually really like that film.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting when you kind of have that experience. And I've had that experience with The Hidden. I did not like this film when I first saw it. I thought it was kind of poo.
Oh, wow.
But now, as time's gone on, I actually really dig it.
Yeah, it's very smartly written, very self-aware without being winky-wink. Yeah, good stunt work throughout. McLaughlin has incredible helmet hair. The squibbing's great in this. Very much a cliche of action, specifically 80s action. The rooftop encounter.
Why when people run away from something, they do? I've always been
saying,
I never know why they go to the top of the building.
Yeah, I don't get it. Clu Gulager's in it. He's underused. I don't want to say wasted because really, this is a physical film, and he was an older man, so
yeah.
The film would have had to slow down for him to keep up, and that's fine. I guess it was nice to see him in a small world, because that's all he really was going to be able to service us with.
Yeah,
so.
He's always a lot of fun, though.
Oh, yeah. Bazooka, great. Blink, if you miss it, Branscombe Richmond.
Yeah, and Danny Trejo, too.
And Danny Trejo, who I didn't see, but I know from the credits was in it, but Branscombe, I see, get wet up by... the alien, so. I really like the decision, to my final note, I really like the decision a character makes at the end of the film. It's very dramatic and poignant as far as this type of film goes. And, yeah, I dug that. You know, it's a good little moment. So, anyway, that's my notes.
All right. Okay, I don't have a whole lot more to add. I mean, I agree with you completely, though. This one, I love the way it opens. I mean, it really opens with a bang, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that car chase is something else. Yeah, a lot of character actors from the '80s in here.
Ed O'Ross, isn't it? Richard Brooks.
Yeah, yeah, all kinds of these like character actors that you
Chris Mulkey.
You might not know the names, but if you see them, if you see their face, you'll definitely know who we're talking about because you'll see a lot of these. You see a lot of these faces in film still to this day, and on TV a lot too. I mean, a lot of these actors are still working.
Me too.
I love that one of the cops is credited as cop with aspirin.
I should always wonder about some of these credits people get, man. They crack me up. Rodeo Drive Girl. And there's another one I laughed about. Oh, yeah, well, there's Jake. He played Roy the dog.
Yeah.
This does have a killer dog moment in it, which is interesting.
It is good.
It is good, especially the way they kind of push him through, they throw him through the door.
Mm-hmm.
In slow-mo, bro.
Oh, yeah.
That dog got a slow-mo close-up.
Yeah, he got Peckinpod, yo.
He got Peckinpod. Oh, man. I was kind of laughing because I wanted to see the... One character plays drunk. One character plays drunk's friend. It's just interesting when you look through credits sometimes what you see. Man, I'll tell you another thing about Kyle MacLachlan. Boy, does he look young in this film. I forget big sometimes because I see him now, and he's one of these silver fox types nowadays.
Yeah, he's aged well. Yeah, I gotta say
he dyes his hair all the time. But from what I understand, like he's he had that real black hair, so he went like completely white headed quite some time ago. So he'll re-dye his hair black all the time. But I think I saw him on, seems like a TV show or something where he let his hair grow gray and stuff. And he's aged well. He really has. He's actually kind of grown more into that kind of awkward face he has mm-hmm. with the chin and everything. Of course, every time I see him, I think of David Lynch.
Of course. He's can't one, help it yeah. between the TV show and the film that he did, films yeah. that he did with him.
He's one of those actors that's like synonymous with a director, and Lynch is always the first person that comes to mind. Like the first time I see him, I immediately start thinking of Blue Velvet and Twin Peaks, and you just can't help it because he's so synonymous with Lynch's work. It's interesting. I think the key to this film, like we were talking about, is the pacing. It's quick. It's punchy. It moves fast. It doesn't give it a lot of time for... It gives some moments of backstory and stuff, but it just keeps moving. Like I said, I didn't really like it the first time I saw it, but as time... This is one that's grown on me as time has went on and really have come to appreciate more and more as the years go by. It could have been anything the first time I saw it. It could have been a bad mood. It could have been not in the mood for this type of film. Who knows? But just at the time, I remember thinking, wow, you know, maybe this film should stay hidden. But, you know, I as time's gone on, I've seen it like four or five more times. And this time, revisiting again, I was like, wow, you know, this film is punchy, man. And I really do dig it, you know. The late 80s fashions are cracking me up, though. That one African-American cop with the blazer with kind of the white thread meshed into it. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Man, I remember how popular those fucking things were. Those blazers. And not only that, but sweaters like that. You remember how popular sweaters like that were?
Yeah.
That is so 80s, it hurts, man. Thankfully, it wasn't 90s, but it was very 80s, let me tell you.
It's 87, this movie, so this high fashion indeed.
Yes. Yes, yes. Very high fashion indeed, including Claudia Christian's dress she wears out of the strip club, which if you're going to advertise the goods, why go into the strip club?
Yeah, I took a screenshot. I was going to post it on the Horror Hound wall.
Yeah, it's pretty great, you know, but she comes out with that. But, you know, one of the things that I find more interesting about this film now is that I'm actually touched by the way it ends.
Oh, I know. Absolutely.
It's amazing. This time around, maybe it's having children. I don't know.
And humanity, you're being more in tune with mortality.
But I was touched. I really was. Yeah. Not like tearing up and crying like I was with Over the Top, man. Where I was like, my fucking dad. I'm a little Silver and Gold, but I love it. I got to say, for you guys who don't listen to Silver and Gold, one of my favorite things about that show is whenever they go, I love you, Dad. every fucking time they do it, I laugh. Every fucking time.
Or I hate you, Dad.
Yeah. Every fucking time I laugh.
Yeah, it is good. I love when Zom goes, or Loaf goes,
yeah.
Like when he's doing that laugh when they carry on a bit for a while.
Yeah.
Those two fucking guys.
Yeah, those two fucking douchebags. I did find the ending this time even more touching. I don't know. Although I got to admit, man, Michael Nouri kind of got these exotic looks to him. You know, he's kind of a dapper looking guy. Attractive to some, maybe ugly to others, but he's definitely got like an ethnic face. I think he's of Spanish and Irish descent. Maybe
he's
a little
Iraqi Irish.
Yeah, something else. There's something else mixed in. Anyway, so he's kind of got this exotic look. But the wife, man, the wife I was not digging on, man.
And she was busted.
Yeah, she was.
Mercs, just mercs.
And not only that, but the clothing choices they put her in, fuck.
She had like Bill Cosby sweaters on.
She looked like a woman who was middle-aged trying to stay hip. And it was
Nouri needed to ditch that piece, man.
Yeah, he did. She looked like she's listening to too much Prince and thought, hey, I'm going to go buy some clothes like that.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, it was. So that wasn't, that was the week. That was.
She couldn't hang with the Nouri.
Yeah, she couldn't. I like Nouri's crib, too. The house in L.A. It was nice. Nice little house. Oh, yeah. But yeah, no, I think the film is good. And it's amazing how this film has been redirected for me. I like films like this that, you know, give me one impression the first time I see it, and as time's gone on, I like it more and more. I can even remember the second time I watched it. I remember thinking to myself, man, I didn't like this the first time. Why am I watching this again? And I remember liking it a little bit more, thinking, well, maybe it's okay. And I remember watching it the third time, thinking, man, I don't know why I keep watching this fucking movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of glad I have, because as time's gone on, I've liked it more and more. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on The Hidden.
Nice. Make or break the opening. Lets us know exactly what we're in for. It's done professionally, proficiently. It's pacey, punchy. It's just great. Really great stuff. My MVT is the writing. This is a really well-written film. As much as I could have gone with the charisma or the chemistry between Nuri and McLaughlin, or a number of things, the stunt work. I think the writing is what elevates this film. It's much like when you get your Night of the Creeps, your Return of the Living Deads, a lot of the O'Bannon joints, a lot of the stuff like that, the Decker stuff. Those films stand the test of time because they're well written. And I think this is what makes this film stand the test of time, is how well it's written. So the writing of this film is what stands it apart for me. I'm going to go out on a limb and say I can't see anyone who listens to our show not enjoying this film. Right? Because it's not esoteric. It's just a fun romp. It's a smart, fun romp. I can't see anyone who likes our show not liking this movie. And my score for the film is a 7.5 out of 10. This is definitely a buy. I think it's a really good, good, good film.
Nice. Nice. All right, let's see here. I will go make a break. Also the opening, because it really, really opens with a bang. I mean, it really does. So I really dug it quite a bit. And every time I see it, I forget how good that stuff is in the beginning, right? It's so good in the beginning. Really kind of opens your eyes and like, bam, you know. I was actually making the breaks for the show while watching the beginning of this last night, and I kept pausing the movie and working on the break, and then stopped working on the break to unpause the movie to watch the car chase again. So
awesome.
It kept going back to it and stuff. Ended up watching it twice, this opening car chase, because it's really good. It's a really good car chase, should be said.
It is. It is. And everything, all the technical stuff is great. It's very executed very efficiently.
Yeah. My MVT, I'm going to go with the stunt work, because I think all the stunt work in the film is really good. Impressive, even to say the least. I mean, it's some good stuff. So I really dug that. My score, just a little bit lower than yours. It's 7 out of 10. Again, this comes from a guy who did not like this film the first time I saw it. If I was to think about how I felt the first time I saw this film, I would probably have given it like a 4. Like a 3 or a 4. I know that sounds crazy now.
That's crazy talk.
But at the time, that's how I felt about it, right? And as time's gone on, this thing's gone all the way up to a 7. So, you know, who knows? That's the way it goes sometimes. It's the way it goes, bro. It's just...
It's just the way it is.
Yeah. A little Hornsby.
Yeah.
Make sure to mix some of that in.
And the rain.
Yeah. All right. So that is the show. I want to thank Barney for programming the show. We had some good discussion on these films. So.
Some trash, some class, some trashy class.
Yeah. Taint till you faint.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good stuff. I don't know what we're doing next week. You want to do the pleasantries, or?
I do know what we're doing next week, and I don't have time for pleasantries.
Okay. Oh, that's fine. That's fine.
We're going to be doing The Raid.
Oh, nice.
Finally. The Blue. It's going to be our Diabolik DVD episode. Of course, if we get our package in time.
Yep.
We're going to be doing The Raid, and we're going to be reviewing the Criterion Blue of Videodrome.
Wow. A little Cronenberg and a little Indonesian Kung Fu, huh?
Yeah, just at balls to the wall, high octane action, so.
Yeah.
There we go.
Balls to the wall and vaginas to the stomach.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely.
Well, there's gonna be a lot of interesting conversation about Videodrome. I can already tell you that right now.
Oh, big time.
You guys be prepared, because there's a lot going on in Videodrome.
Yeah.
Oh. I haven't watched that film in years, but I know anyway, we'll get to that. All right. That is the big show. Again, thanks, Bernie. Thanks, everybody, again, who contributed to the Kickstarter. And yes. With that, we'll say adios.
Adios.
Thanks for listening. You can find the gentleman at ggtmc.com. You can call the gentleman at 206-666-5207. And you can email the gentleman at midnightcinema@gmail.com.